two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome to Project Recovery, a podcast about addiction, but more importantly, what, Dr. Matt?
It's about recovery.
That's right. It's brought to you by useonlyasdirected.org. They've got a three-part solution. Speak out, opt out, and of course, throw out. And I lied to you, Dr. Matt.
You did?
I said that they were going to be on this week.
Yeah, you did.
They're going to be on next week.
Right.
And
right.
So make sure you tune in next week and continue listening to this one for useonlyasdirected.org.
Yeah, I'm excited to have them on the show.
And so we're excited for them. This is going to be good. And we thank them for sponsoring our podcast, allowing us to do what we do. Now, this week's episode, we're not going to have a guest because I think there's a lot going on in the world. And to say a lot is an understatement.
Right. Well, we wanted to kind of catch people up on what we've been talking about off the show.
You know, and we've also got some questions from viewers and listeners, so we're going to get to those. But to give people behind the scenes kind of an insight of Project Recovery and how the podcast works, normally we record on a Thursday.
Right.
And then we release the new episode on Tuesday. So I remember sitting in here last week with Jared Miller from the Miller Motivational Group, right? And He was getting ready to tell his story. And while we're doing this, somebody lets us know about the things that are happening up in Ogden. And that was the officer who had been shot and killed.
Right. We were getting bits and pieces of that while we were recording the show.
And so, I mean, that is horrendous in itself. And mm-hmm. that is usually a cause for the state to stop, take a breath, and kind of just kind of consume what's going on.
Yeah, people come together. That's a collective interest, of course, for everybody, and find out what happened. And that is what started happening on Thursday.
Yeah. And so, you know, that went on. And then Friday, protests began downtown Salt Lake, and then the protest turned into an all-out riot.
It did. And Friday is funny. I was working from home and was so busy, I didn't really realize that sort of thing was happening until Saturday.
Yeah. For me, I was glued to the TV all day long watching that and watching it unfold and sitting there just... I mean, I was in awestruck. I mean, I just go, this is Utah. This doesn't happen in Utah.
My kids showed me, they said, hey, Dad, come check this out. And I assumed it was a different city when I was watching the news, because we just don't typically see that sort of stuff going on in Salt Lake.
You know, when you see a car flipped over and burning and people in masks and smoke. Right. I mean, I grew up in the news industry. I worked in it for 20 years. And normally when you saw that, it wasn't even in this country.
Right.
And to find out that there's two cars flipped over on fire in Salt Lake City, police in riot gear, windows being broken out. I mean,
spray paint everywhere.
I mean, it was... Yeah. And right now, I am still trying to comprehend all of what's going on, and I don't have an understanding really of what's going on. I was reading Facebook, and I should probably get off of Facebook because...
I don't know. There's a lot of really good quality content there.
But one post I read was, and it was something like this. It said, if you walk around thinking everything's okay, then you're ignorant to what's going on. If you walk around mad at everything, then you're just being a pessimist because you don't see what good's going on. If you say blue lives matter, then you're not supporting Black Lives Matter. If you say Black Lives Matter, you're not supporting the police. It, you know, right. there's a counter argument to everything that's going on right now. And everybody's shouting at the top of their lungs, listen to me and see my side of the situation. And I think there's a lot of that going on. But the best advice that Facebook has given me in the past 5 days is shut up and listen.
Oh, okay.
You know, yeah. And I think that is, because I'm not saying that all those situations aren't happening and all those people don't deserve to be heard.
Right.
But if we're all speaking at the same time,
yeah,
nobody's listening.
So that's an interesting tie-in. I had a conversation with a college-age person a couple days ago, and he was feeling badly because he hadn't gone to participate. You know, he lives in Salt Lake, and he thought, man, I could have just gone a few blocks from my apartment and participated in the demonstration, but I didn't do it. And I said, well, what'd you do instead? He said, well, I just kind of, you know, didn't know what I wanted to say, so I sat and just read things online and talked to friends. And I said, well, how could that, I mean, isn't that a little better? And he and I both agreed that this is a time to educate ourselves more than demonstrate, perhaps. I mean, if you feel it's important to demonstrate, then please do it peacefully, and of course. But I think most people right now are talking and not listening. And listening, reading, educating yourself, formulating your beliefs and opinions, that's an important thing to come out of all of this for each of us, I think.
You know, and the thing that I find myself just wondering all the time. Now, from my house in Farmington to get to Salt Lake, I had four different interactions with four different people that had four different takes on the state of the world.
Hmm.
You know, and all of them believe what they believe, and I think that's great. But then I don't believe with all of them. And so, I mean, I'm just walking around right now just with my mind blown, confused, trying to go, do I believe this? Do I do this? What do I do this? If I do this, am I making these people mad? If I don't do this, am I making these people mad? And what do I believe? And so I think you're right. I think it's time for an education, and it's not time for a shouting match where, hey, listen to my side. My side is the right side. Because who knows?
And who's to say that's true? I mean, just because you have an opinion doesn't mean you're necessarily right. And I think the more extreme opinions are usually less correct. And most things are more moderate if we look at it that way. I think in Salt Lake City and all the other cities where riots are happening around the country or were happening, I think they've mostly chilled out to more peaceful demonstrations. But you get this kind of group hysteria.
Mob mentality.
Mob mentality is another way to say it. And that's a real phenomenon. People get swept up in it. And it comes from, you know, high emotions, low, you know, thought. You're not really processing and thinking logically and rationally. Your emotions sweep you up in this kind of mob mentality, this group hysteria. And that's where you get the violence and those sorts of things. And of course, there are some people that always feel disenfranchised and they look for these sorts of opportunities to do things like loot and break into stores and do those sorts of things, which is very, very sad. But it starts the conversation of how can we as a society do better to help people, you know, not feel on the outskirts of society so much. What can we do to help all people? And of course, this has been focused on race, but there are a lot of other factors that put people in desperate situations. And when a mob mentality takes over, then they jump in and use it to kind of their advantage, I guess.
Now, stay with me. I don't know if this is going to work, but I almost see a similar correlation with addiction.
Okay.
Because in addiction, you're doing things that you normally wouldn't do.
Right.
You're finding yourself being isolated, unheard, and so you're looking for ways to comfort yourself, to be heard. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people go into it like that, you know, because they found a community. Mm-hmm. They found something to make them feel better. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden that takes control of their lives and they find themselves doing things that they normally wouldn't do. How many times have we had people in here on the podcast that says, if you would have told me in 10 years that I'd have been homeless, living on the streets in Salt Lake City, shoeless, shooting up heroin, I would have told you crazy. But 10 years later, there they are, living in Salt Lake, shoeless, shooting up heroin and robbing and stealing and doing things they would have never, ever done.
No, I think that's a super valid point, that a lot of substance abuse starts with trying to medicate, so to speak, you know, negative emotions in our lives, feeling lonely, feeling unimportant, feeling sad, mental health issues like depression and anxiety, and not knowing how to get help for those things directly. So people take this quick and easy but dangerous route of self-medicating. You're right, absolutely. By having a broader conversation about the things that kick off a substance abuse, I think we can do a lot of prevention of substance abuse.
Yeah, here's another thing that just popped into my head, and throughout this podcast, a lot of stuff's going to pop in my head. Some of it's going to work, some of it's not going to work.
Oh, it all
but
works.
But I think some people would be surprised of how many emails, how many phone calls, how many people reach out from first responders, police officers, firefighters, who end up using substance to calm their nerves, to get through. Because you think about it, they're every day is seeing people on their worst day.
Right.
You know?
Right. That's a good way to put it.
And, I mean, that's their normal. And
even all the reporters from the different news outlets that were downtown and got swept up in, you know, a scary situation. I mean, those sorts of situations cause a lot of stress, and those people often don't know where to go for support.
And I think right now, I think the world is crying and just wants to be heard. But once again, we cannot listen if everybody's speaking at the same time. And I think that's what's going on right now. Everybody is speaking at the same time. So you're listening to Project Recovery. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to talk with Dr. Matt about what he's seeing and what his therapist friends are talking about substance abuse going on during the pandemic, the protesting, and all of that. So we'll be right back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
All right, Dr. Matt, you know, a lot of times on Project Recovery, I always say it was a perfect storm. And what I mean by like that, all things happened for these people to either get recovery or get addicted. Mm-hmm. And right now, I think there's a perfect storm swirling around the world right now for a lot of things to happen. Now, you've talked to some of your therapist friends and you've read some stuff online. What are they saying about the pandemic and the protesting and the things that are going on right now?
Well, I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head. The more stress that is going on in a person's life, the higher risk they are for mental health issues, as including, you know, substance abuse. And if you just pause and think about the last, you know, two and a half months in our world, and especially here in Salt Lake, you know, what have we had? So we had this pandemic, and we still have it, and quarantine, and all of a sudden life totally changes, and a bunch of new stressors that we weren't planning on. Parents are trying to manage kids at home and do their school and their work and all these sorts of things, and we're kind of locked down. A lot of the things that people normally do to de-stress, you and I have talked about, like, well, one of the things I like to do on the weekends is go out to dinner. Well, that stopped, right?
People like to go to live music, concerts.
I had several concerts that I'm very disappointed not to be seeing this summer, and one in April that I missed.
Ways to kind of let the release valve.
Yeah,
go.
All those normal, what we'd call kind of healthy, typical pressure valve releases are no longer available. And people start adjusting and supporting each other, and kids are drawing on the sidewalks, positive messages. It's okay. And then here in Utah, earthquakes hit.
Yeah.
You know, and now we're dealing, then the earthquakes come and people start going, whoa, wait a second. You know, we're trying to deal with this. Now we got the earthquakes. And then it keeps extending out and people's finances are starting to wane and suffer, and mental health is starting to suffer more because people are cooped up at home. And, you know, my kids are older, so luckily they're pretty self-sufficient, but I can't imagine having, you know, two or three or four little elementary school age kids at home and having to manage them in the house all, you know, I mean, it's just so much. And then, you know, we're starting to feel a little bit of relief, as you know, the color goes from red to orange and orange to yellow. And then what happens? We have in our community last week, we had a police officer shot who was, you know, trying to help on a domestic violence call. And that was an awful, sad thing. And everybody was watching that and feeling support. And then on the weekend, we have the city kind of erupts in craziness like we've never really seen here in Salt Lake.
Over the murder of George Floyd.
Exactly. And the whole country is kind of trying to get its balance on what to do about that. And some people are taking advantage of that by, you know, I mean, I don't know how we're helping the cause if we're looting a van store. I saw online some lady come out with the biggest smile on her face and boxes of van shoes, and I thought, well, I love van shoes, but that's the worst. I just that was one of the most disheartening photos that I saw. Was she looked so happy, you know, looting that store. So all these stresses and pressures that people don't, that are unexpected, that's a big part of it. If it's an unexpected pressure or stress,
and most stresses are unexpected,
and the expected ones we develop skills for, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have our normal healthy things we do. You know, there's been a lot of joking about day drinking now, but the problem is it's not a joke. Like, you know, I believe the liquor stores here in Utah have had some pretty record sales over the last couple of months, from what I understand.
My little brother works for a beer company,
yeah,
which is ironic in itself because I do a podcast on recovery.
Yeah.
But they had record numbers, like midsummer numbers, in the first part of the epidemic. And
yeah,
because everybody was staying at home, everybody got, you know, they didn't have to go to work. And so, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, people are drinking in between their work Zoom calls and all those kinds of things. And so the temptation to turn to something that can kind of quickly affect your mental state, make you feel a little relaxed or detached, is very tempting right now. It's a timely message from our sponsor to throw out old medications, because those things are now temptations in a person's house in a way that maybe they hadn't been before. And, you know, the alcohol and marijuana and all these sorts of things are easy for people to turn to because they don't have a skill set. And so the answer is communication. We've talked a lot about connecting, and connecting, people can still reach out, make appointments with their therapist, reach out, talk with each other, be healthy. There's nothing that's stopping us from exercising and doing those sorts of things. But it's hard. It's hard to resist that temptation of substance abuse. And so in this, you know, epidemic of social stress, epidemic of viruses, people are at very high risk, and we're seeing a lot of increase in substance abuse and unfortunately the things that go with it, like domestic violence.
I was listening to the news this morning, and it was, I think, 2.5 months ago, this guy went on a Buddhist retreat.
Okay. And I've always wanted to do that.
And he went for 2.5 months.
Wow. That'd be fun.
But he went, and he just got out, I think it was May 26th. So when he went in,
it was fine.
It was fine. And he came out, and I mean, we went the virus, the mm-hmm. protests, the social unrest, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was like, whoa.
Yeah. Whoa. I'm going back.
But you think about that, you know what I mean? But okay, so that was a big shock in him. Yeah. But somebody who's just getting their recovery under their legs, and just working on this, and they're trying to get back, and everywhere they turn, I mean, it's not a great job market. It's not a great housing market.
Right.
You're not allowed to go out and do anything. I mean, those people need love. Everybody needs love, but we do need to reach out and be that neighbor and lend a hand and help out where we can. Is all I can do is just be there for people and hopefully do it with love.
So, and I think that's the key is just because you don't know what your friends and family are going through, isn't, you know, just because you think they're doing okay, I should say, doesn't mean that they are. And a good example of that was recently I talked to a teenage boy who, just this week spoke with him and his sister. He's a white kid and his sister married an African American and they live back east. And the great marriage, great relationship. But now, you know, he's worried about what's going to happen to his brother-in-law. Is my brother-in-law okay? And this is a boy who has a lot of stress and anxiety anyway. And as he and I were having the conversation, he usually wants his mom in the room when we talk in on the video chat. And she was saying, I didn't know you were that worried about that, sweetheart. Like he had been holding a lot of his stresses and worries for his brother-in-law and his sister inside this week as he was watching the riots, especially back east. And even his own mom wasn't quite tuned in because he wasn't talking about it. But the minute I started asking questions, it just, you know, poured out of him. And so that tells me with my own kids, with my friends, my family, I need to make sure that I'm reaching out and asking people how they're doing. If people want to keep it private, that's up to them. But once you ask, usually a person will talk to you about it. And that's always the first step in recovery of any sort, recovering from depression, stress and anxiety, and in substance abuse.
I have a bad habit of trying to finish other people's sentences for them. I mean, I really do. And I'm always trying to think of a way to help them. And I think the best way I can do to help right now is to listen. And that's mm-hmm. what I'm trying to do is become a better listener, because I don't think I'm a great listener, because I like to help. I like to give people answers. I like to move the needle. But sometimes I think people just want to be heard. I remember sitting down and talking to my ex-wife, and I would say things, and she'd go, we'll do this, we'll do this. And I said, stop. I don't want you to fix it. I just want you to listen. I just want mm-hmm. you to hear what I'm saying.
Well, there's a term in a therapeutic term called catharsis. Most people are familiar with that. And what we do know is that when a person is able to talk and express their thoughts and feelings in a safe environment, that you can actually measure the relief physically, you know, in their biometrics. And certainly we emotionally feel better when we have somebody who genuinely wants to listen. So a lot of us have that style of wanting to help and fix. And you're right. We maybe need to do that second and listen first. Because sometimes the listening is all it really takes. For a lot of people, just being able to talk about it, they come to their own conclusions and solutions.
I like that. I want to jump back real quick and talk about dealing about all this stress with kids, because you brought up the young man you were talking to earlier this week. As I was getting ready to come down the studio today and record this podcast, I've got a little neighbor kid across the street, and he's the most precocious little guy you've ever met. I mean, he reminds me of the guy on Modern Family. I forget his name, but he's just so funny. He's like, he's probably 4 or 5, but he speaks like he's 30.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, hey, Casey, how are you? And I go, I'm doing good, buddy. How are you? And his grandma's out there, and I go, hey, have you ridden that bike yet? And he goes, no, haven't ridden the bike yet. And I go, why? And he goes, coronavirus is out there, Casey. And I go, what? And she goes, yeah, he's afraid of everything.
Yeah.
Because he goes, I didn't think he could find another excuse not to get on that bike, but now he's hanging his head on the coronavirus.
Yeah.
And so I stop and I talk to him a little bit. I'm like, well, you're not going to get the coronavirus from riding the bike. He goes, you don't know that. And I go, I'm pretty sure that you're not going to get the coronavirus. And I said, but think about it this way.
He knows you're not a doctor.
Yeah. I go, maybe you could outrun the coronavirus if you got good on the bike.
That's right. There you go.
You know, and I'm trying to spin it. But this kid is like, I don't think it works that way, Casey. And I'm like, dang, I'm being bested by a 5-year-old. How's this going?
Yeah, it happens a lot.
And
to
so,
me.
More than you know. Yeah. And so I'm talking to this kid, and she goes, and the grandma's like, every day it's something new with this kid. It was, you know, the pandemic, it was the coronavirus, it's the protesting, it's the earthquake.
Yeah.
And you think about these young minds. I mean, I was 45 before I experienced my first earthquake. Mm-hmm. I was 45 before I experienced my first, you know, riding in my home state. You know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know how to process this. I can't imagine what my kids are going through and how are they dealing with the stress and the unknown and what's going on.
Oh, for sure. And as adults, it's important for us to remember that kids think differently, especially prepubescent kids haven't really developed the ability to abstract or use kind of abstract reasoning and logic in the way that we do as an adult. And so, you know, as an adult, you know, you can at least reference things in your mind. Yeah, this is your first time seeing a riot in Salt Lake City, and that's hard to process. And even I, you know, I turned on the TV and thought, well, I wonder what city that is. And I was like, oh, crap, I know where that is.
That's my city.
Yeah, that's like by my office. And but we can abstract and we can use logic and reasoning to kind of balance it out and not panic. But a child, they're more concrete. And when they see something like that happening, they can't logically realize that, oh, this isn't going to go on forever. There are, you know, something's going to happen to slow this down. People are going to, you know, there may be some damage, but people will be okay. Kids can't do that. So things like an earthquake or the coronavirus or, you know, the riots, these are things that can be very, very scary to children. And a lot of parents dismiss a child's fear by just saying, oh, it'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Well, the kid walks away worrying about it. And so it's important to allow a child to talk. You know, with the little neighbor boy, it sounds like maybe he's prone to anxiety, which a lot of children are. It's not uncommon. He also is pretty crafty in dealing with his bike fear, mm-hmm. you know, and figuring out excuses not to ride his bike, I guess. But you know, that would be a kid where you'd want to give him a chance to talk and say, well, tell me all about it. You know, just let him go. And then later, maybe help him come to some solutions. But let those kids get it out. Have the conversation. Lately at my house, we've been playing 21.
The basketball game?
No, the card game.
Okay, yeah, I like that game.
Yeah, it's quick and easy. I'm always trying to find ways to get my teenagers to interface with me, so I have to be fast. And at 21, you can sit down and play, have a little fun in a couple of minutes, and then you're done. And that's a good opportunity, you know, that I've tried to take and say, well, what do you think about this? What do you think about what's going on with, you know, the race riots? I mean, we're very detached from that sort of thing. I live in Davis County, and we don't, you know, we don't participate at that level very often because of the type of community we live in. And we see it on TV. We know it exists here in Salt Lake too. And it's good for those kids to be able to talk and formulate their thoughts about, well, what do you believe about this, and what's right about it, what's wrong about it? You know, asking open-ended questions and then being a good listener. And as parents, we don't really need to have the answers, because frankly, that's like you said earlier, everyone has a different opinion, and we can try to help kids see things our way if we have a strong opinion. But if you don't know the answer, it's still worth talking about.
I was sitting there with Frankie, and we were watching the news, and we were watching the protesting. And this is verbatim. She goes, Dad, what are they protesting? I said, well, George Floyd was murdered, and they want to bring light to that fact. And she goes, okay. And then the protesting turned to rioting.
Right.
And then Frankie goes to me. She goes, Dad, do you think George would be happy they're doing this? And I said, I don't know.
It's a great question.
She's
thinking.
I don't know. Yeah. I said, I don't think so, but I don't know.
Didn't know him.
Yeah. And, you know, and so she's asking these kinds of questions. But then I'm watching the news. I've been watching the news way too much lately. But they're saying, as therapists and parents, when talking to your children about this, make sure the information you're giving them is age appropriate.
That's true.
Right. You know, I think sometimes parents think, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm just going to, you know what I mean? But I, you know, because I don't want to lie to my kids. I don't want to put a wrapper on this and a bow, and I'm going to tell them exactly what's going on.
But how you, but it has to be in an age appropriate way so that they can understand, right? And by being very, very direct, you might give a false impression that things are not going to end or get better. And that's my biggest worry about younger children, is they start to worry that things aren't going to improve and get better. And I would definitely, in addition to how we talk to them and making that age appropriate, I would also say be guarded about what they see. It's not great for a kid to sit there with mom and dad for hours watching a car burning on TV over and over and over again. That's why we want to limit those images. You can talk to them about it, and that helps them understand, but you have to realize that they don't abstract their logic, and it's hard for them.
Yeah. Well, all right, Dr. Matt, thank you for the free therapy session for me today. I really do appreciate it.
You're doing good, buddy.
Hey, you're listening to Project Recovery. Make sure you tune in to episode 2. We've got some listener questions and comments. We once again want to thank you for tuning us in once a week and listening to Project Recovery.
Of this program are for informational purposes only. The program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician, licensed therapist, or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this program. KSL does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the program. Reliance on any information provided on the program is solely at your own risk.